the thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
Now, can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode. Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go,
don't! It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3, KTAR.
And welcome once again to the Computer Corner. It is the data doctors in the house along with Lewis from Mac Media. So we've got your Windows covered and we've got your Macintoshes covered. Apples and Windows. Anyway, we're glad you joined us this afternoon as we spend the next couple of hours talking about technology and stuff that we like to talk about. Have some fun, answer some questions, have more fun. We've already filled our bellies. Well, at least most of us have. Robert's going to jump in here in between the breaks, but we want you to join in on the conversation, and we have a multitude of ways for you to do it. For you old-timers, you traditionalists, we have the rusty wire, the analog telephone method, 602-277-5827. And we like that one because that's the only one where you can actually be on the show with us.
True, and you can call in and say hi to Pete.
You can. 602-277-5827, or you can join us online at datadoctors.com/radio. It's a quick way to get there, or you can click on the radio show link anywhere on our site. And it will take you to today's page, which will show you what today's theme is, along with the resources and links that we've posted, our Geek Speak of the Week, and a place for you to ask a question or just give us general feedback. Those of you tweeps out there listening, you Twitterati, those listening and having a Twitter page open, or if you have your mobile device and you prefer Twitter, well, you can interface with us from your Twitter account. What I like about Twitter is none of the questions can be these long-winded, right, drawn-out 45-paragraph questions that are, you know, you got to wait till you get to the end to actually figure out what they're asking.
How many characters did they limit you?
140 characters. You must articulate your thought. You know what? That's the power of Twitter, though. Because you know what? If you can't articulate the thought in that short period of time or that short space, then you probably don't do it, right? And if you can, I mean, let's face it, we're all ADD on the internet anymore, right? Now. And so everything's short and sweet and concise. And
well, sometimes, though, you have to get on the internet and research these abbreviations.
Well, there is that. But most of it's, you know, from the chat world and MySpace. And, I mean, it's not really all that new. Now, there are those Twitter-specific words that are kind of coming to the fore. I refer to people that are really smart on Twitter as having twisdom.
So they have their own speech then.
Well, they just put TW in front of whatever you can.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, like my wife is my tweetheart. Right. The listeners are the tweeps. Tweeple. You know, I mean, it's there you go. Actually, there's a whole host of Twitter dictionary sites out there now with all the different Twitter terminology. In fact, if you're one of those, I got an email again yesterday, or I saw an email in our inbox yesterday about, you know, I've asked over and over again, what the heck is this Twitter thing? If that's your question, call in, because when we answer your question on the air, those listening generally learn from your question. And that's really the basis of this show has been for the last 12, 15 years. I lost count how many years we've been on. You know, we're terrible about that. We don't do like anniversary shows. I don't know what the first airing date was for, you know, when we actually took over and became the hosts. I know we were on with Michael Dixon for years as a Sunday guest. That's terrible, isn't it? It just...
We'll have to bring in some cake and some balloons. And
I don't have... Yeah, we'll just make up an anniversary.
Up an anniversary.
Well, I know Michelangelo in 1992 is when things really started. And that's when I did my very first talk show with Jamie McFerrin here on the Mighty Mighty KTAR. So it's been a great relationship. So at least, you know, we know for sure it's been 17 years of at least being on and off. But we appreciate you joining us. We're here to help you. We're here to have fun. The phone lines are loaded as what happens whenever we open the show, which is, you know, that's good. Lots of people, lots of questions. we'll see if we can't answer them. Today's theme, however, is one that we think, Lewis and I were kind of brainstorming yesterday. What should we talk about that's, you know, going to be interesting and helpful? And we said, you know, we haven't really delved into this whole world of video displays anymore. This screen that we look at, it's used to be, it's just you get it, you do your word processing, that's it. Now your display can be your computer display. It can be your internet TV display. It can be your traditional television display. It can be
your phone.
It could be your phone. It could, it's unbelievable. You could wear your display like a pair of glasses. I mean, there's just so many different ways. Plus, the Consumer Electronics Show, a lot of the new technology and displays were being shown. Brighter, cleaner, clearer, just amazing displays. So we're going to talk about that in general. You don't have to have a question about display technology, but if you happen to be in the market to purchase a new display, hey, this is the show for you. We're going to give you some technical specs to concentrate on. We're going to give you some non-technical things to look at. And hopefully by the end of the show, you'll have a few buying tips. And hopefully, you know, you remember this show or you bookmark the show on our webpage so that down the road when you are in the market, you'll remember, oh, yeah, they talked about this. And, of course, the podcast will be up sometime midweek next week after we edit them and make them all beautiful.
Well, so. I think with displays, too, it's getting beyond the size of the display and the price and actually looking at what's internally making this thing tick.
Exactly. Now, I'm going to pick up this first call. This is rare that the first call of the day is going to be, it's going to be Brandon with a Mac question. First
Hi.
Call of the day. Hi there, Brandon. my headphones jack was turned up, or my headphones level was a little high there when you said hi.
I understand.
I jumped.
I didn't.
You have a question about a Mac G4 upgrade?
Yes, thank you. I have a I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
I have a 3 or 4 year old G4, and I'm unable to. I just bought a new iPod, and I'm unable to get the latest iTunes program to download. It says that I don't have the latest whatever, and I was wanted to upgrade to the new OS X or whatever it's called, the operating system.
Oh, and they're all named after your cats.
Yeah, okay. and I want to upgrade, and I'm not the original owner of the laptop. I bought it on Craigslist, and I don't have the startup disks, and I'm wondering if it's even worth my time to try to do it.
Well, that's okay.
All right, we're going to put you on hold, Brandon. That's a teaser because we're coming up on the first break, but I wanted to get that question in, give you a little time to really think through your answer. Right, Lewis? As if you need the time, right?
It's like Jeopardy.
Where have I heard this question before, right? How many years you've been in the Mac world?
Too many.
Okay. So how many times have you had this question?
Daily?
Oh, yeah. Which is good. That means a lot of other people have a similar situation. So, Brandon, hang tight. We're going to go to take our first break here. It's the Computer Corner. It's Ken and Robert from Data Doctors and Lewis from Mac Media here to talk technology, computers, whatever it is that's on your mind. 602-277-5827. When you hear somebody hang up, stay tuned for more. You're listening to the Computer Corner. It's the digital display edition of the Computer Corner. We're going to get into specific things that you should know about if you happen to be in the market for a new display, or for when down the road you're in the market for a new display. We're going to try to edumacate you a little bit on what it is that you should look for. Good news on displays is half the battle is look at it, you know? Look at it straight on, look at it from the side, look at it from the angles, right?
I would think clarity would be important.
Right.
Right.
So we'll give you some more tips on that. Before we went to break, we were speaking with Brandon, who's got a secondhand Mac G4, older operating system, wants to get the new iTunes on. And, of course, Apple says, you got to come along all the way or you can't play. Right, Brandon?
Correct.
And you're looking for help from Mr. Lewis from Mac Media. What do you have for him there, Lewis?
Well, it's really a couple things that you have to look at. You have to look at the speed of the computer, the amount of hard disk space available, and the amount of RAM in the computer. If your machine is 867 megahertz or faster, you can run the Leopard operating system, which is 10.5. You want to have about a gig of memory and about 12 gigabytes of hard disk space available to install it.
Yeah, yeah, and that's where I'm at. I remember seeing the 10.5. So
yep. So basically, the operating system runs about $129.
Okay.
And you'll just want to throw that in. I normally recommend doing what's called an archive and install instead of just upgrading the operating system, because when you upgrade, you carry some of those bugs across to the new system. So if you do an archive and install, it'll just bring that user information over as well.
It's like a do-over, but the user information comes over.
Exactly.
Yeah, in Windows, there's nothing like that.
It's nice. It works flawlessly.
Windows reloading the OS from scratch is very time-consuming. Because not only do you have to load the Windows CD, then you have to go and load all the drivers for the specific hardware, and then you have to go get all the updates for all the drivers and all of the operating system updates. And if it's really old, you might have to go through like 3 service packs. It's really wonderful.
That sounds like a process. So, Brandon, you're just going to throw that disk in, and in about an hour, you're going to be ready to go.
All right. Thank you for your time, sir.
All right, Brandon. You. Take care. And there's another reason why I think a lot of people say, well, yeah, I like the Macs because even, you know, when you have to redo things and start over, it's nowhere near as traumatic. Yeah?
Not normally, no.
Of course, given time.
As long as you back your data.
Yeah, now there's something that everybody does, right? Not. Let's now see if we can help Terry. Terry, you got a question about these newfangled little tiny computers that you're hearing a lot about.
Yeah, yes, sir. In fact, I saw one on Tuesday night, my first one. A friend of mine bought one, and we were across the room, so I didn't get to check it out very, very, very much. But it's like about a 9 or a 10 inches, the way it looked like.
Yep.
He said that it was a Dell,
mm-hmm.
and my old Dell C600 is 15 inches. That thing is heavy as all get out. I'm not heavy into computers, but I like to travel and take one with me.
Sure.
And I was just wondering if one of these little small ones that, you know, they only sell $300 or $400, if that'd be worth having, you know?
Yeah, you're referring to what are called netbooks.
Okay.
Instead of a notebook, right? Your uh-huh. your 15-inch Dell is considered a notebook computer.
Right.
This is considered a netbook because it primarily relies on an internet connection to be functional.
Yes.
Okay? Now, that doesn't mean you can't use it as a regular computer, word processing, that kind of thing. So when you're on the airplane, you can be writing letters, you can even be pre-staging some emails, that kind of thing. But you won't have an internet connection, so a lot of the functionality won't work until you land and get connected.
I also know that you can't, unless you download it onto the hard drive, you can't play movies. There's no DVD player. With
well,
it.
There's a problem. Well, you can actually buy an external drive that plugs in through a USB port that
mm-hmm.
will play DVDs and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is the battery life probably won't manage that too well.
Right.
Although, you know, if you use a netbook as a netbook without the heavy-duty requirements of a CD-ROM or, a DVD, you can get netbooks now that'll go 4, 5, 6 hours of battery life. But I think, you know, just like with your Dell 15-inch laptop, you've probably gone on a trip and watched movies, right?
Yes, can until the person puts their seat back.
Well, but can you get through an entire movie before the battery dies?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So you know, a lot of laptops, especially their big power-hungry laptops, you got to have 2 batteries to be able to get through. You know, you got an hour and 20-minute movie, you get to an hour and 10 minutes, and it dies.
Mm-hmm.
You slap another battery in to watch the last 10 minutes.
But
not
I would
fun.
Only need, I would only want it for just surfing the internet and also in the hotel room.
Yeah, that's what it's designed for. Now, I caution you if you're thinking of using this as your primary computer, it's like what you use all the time.
Mm-hmm.
If you have another computer that does the heavier lifting,
that's correct.
Then that's what this. I call this the third computing space. I'm stealing this from Mr. Schultz over at Starbucks. Right? He refers to Starbucks as the third place. You got homework and what am I doing a Starbucks commercial for? But this is like the third computing space. We have our traditional computers. We all, most of us now, have some form of smartphone. You know, and the iPhone, when I went from a BlackBerry to the iPhone, I was actually able to take a lot of trips without my laptop because the iPhone did so well. But there's some stuff in between, and that's where that netbook really comes in handy. And I, having just gone through a very long trip to the East Coast with my first netbook test, if you will, seat reclining, no problem. There's room on the tray for the netbook and my little portable mouse. So make sure that you test the keyboard of the one that you want to buy because that's one of the biggest gotchas. And then make sure that the screen is in that 10-inch range so that it's small, but it's still big enough that you can see everything.
Well, I'm a two-finger hunting pick, so the keyboard wouldn't really bother me that much.
All right, hang tight here. I'm going to take you off the air and give you some more advice there. We are talking technology, as we always do on Saturday afternoon. It is the Computer Corner. Ken and Robert from Data Doctors, Lewis from Mac Media. We got both ends of the universe covered today. 602-277-5827. Two lines open. You're listening to the Computer Corner with the Data Doctors and Lewis from Mac Media. Talking about the digital display world today and how it's changed quite a bit, and some of the things you may want to keep in mind for when you you go about replacing your display. If you've got one of those old CRTs, I mean, they work, but they're humongous and generate a lot of heat, use a lot more power. So, you know, getting those flat panels is kind of cool. Now, having said that, hardcore gamers and those that like to do video or watch television, that kind of thing, the old CRTs, those tube-type monitors actually did a much better job because they had a quicker refresh rate, if you will. And so that's a consideration for those of you looking at replacing your monitor, is to make sure you understand that the monitor you buy, if it's not designed for action gaming or streaming television, you kind of get that ghosting, almost pixelated kind of display. You know,
the tiling.
Yeah, there's some tiling. It's just ghosting. Also, you know, it's not a good match.
Yeah, I'll get that sometimes in my old plasma if I'm watching action movies.
Yeah, because on a plasma, I think they refer to it as refresh rate. I'm looking here in some of the notes that we have here, but in the monitor world or the display world, you want to look for the refresh rate is referred to as, where is it at here? Oh, the pixel response rate. And basically it'll give you a rating in milliseconds. It'll be MS. This is a pixel response rate, or it may just say response rate. The lower that number is, the quicker it can respond, and more likely it's going to be able to keep up with those action gaming programs, or if you want to be able to watch television or DVDs on this display. So the rule of thumb, according to CNET, is make sure it's 15 milliseconds or faster. So 12 to 15 millisecond refresh rates or response rate for your LCD panels will give you a better chance of that display being capable of doing that. Now, if you're getting a flat panel, you use email, and you know, you might watch some YouTube videos, and nothing. It's no big deal, but it's a spec that now you understand what it means and what to look for, and tuck that away and see what happens. Right? Believe it or not, we have yet another Mac question. That's two. We don't normally get two in a whole show. Dave.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for bringing the level of the Mac information up for today.
Well, I appreciate you taking my call.
How can Lewis help you?
I have a newer unibody MacBook, and I back it up using Time Capsule and a portable hard drive. And my question is, if I want to replace the hard drive in the laptop, can I replace the laptop, reinstall OS X, and use Time Capsule to restore the new drive to the previous state of the one that I replaced?
Absolutely. What you'll want to do is, once you've replaced that hard drive, you're going to want to do what's called a Time Machine Restore. And basically what you'll do is put the system disk that came with the computer in the super drive, start off of that, and there'll be an option during the startup process to do a Time Machine Restore. Once you've done that, it'll look at the Time Capsule. You'll pick the last backup that you've done and restore, and when it's done, everything should be as it was previously.
Hold on a minute.
That makes it easy.
Why do they call it a super drive?
Because it's super. I have no idea. Because it does multiple things, apparently. It's kind of like the Mighty Mouse. It's ridiculous.
Whatever.
I'm sorry.
Super drive. Those Apple people. Does that help you, Dave?
It certainly answers my question. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for calling in, and thanks for holding. And that's how it works. It opens up a phone line, 602-277-5827. Let's see. Rick was the guy we wanted to put on next. Rick.
Hello.
You have a very interesting project that you're trying to undergo. Tell the people your pain.
Well, I'm trying to eliminate paying for some of the outside resources, like my cable TV,
uh-huh.
and just try to use the high-speed internet, which I don't want to lose anyway,
okay.
And watch the shows or movies off of it. And I'm just looking at how to, I figure with my wireless laptop, I could set it next to my TV, but as far as connecting the laptop to the TV, and I'm also looking at... I have an antenna. I didn't throw this in earlier, but I have an antenna in my attic,
mm-hmm.
and I'm able to get a number of the local stations.
Sure.
And I've got one of the little digital boxes for some of my old sets.
Okay.
But I was looking at also with a laptop of a digital tuner, a card to put with PM. Shoot.
You're talking about where it can take television signals over the air as well.
Right, and also record onto the hard drive, use it for time slip recording.
Okay, so before we get into all of these different angles and things, I mean, to be able to accomplish what you want to do and get rid of that cable box, you're going to add about 18 layers of complexity that don't exist today. You know how you can pick up your remote control, you pop on the cable box, and you pop on and you go?
Uh-huh.
It ain't going to be like that in the world that you envision with all this stuff.
Okay.
First of all, in order to be able to use internet-based resources, you're going to have some kind of keyboard, right? And
right.
So does that mean you're going to run up to the computer every time you want to go to a new website? Or are you going to get a remote, like a wireless keyboard and mouse? Or are you going to sit on the couch with the keyboard in your lap? And I mean,
I was envisioning using the laptop, hooking it by cable to the TV, and then using a wireless mouse and keyboard, through the USB port of the laptop.
But you understand visually, right? Plopping down on the couch and grabbing the remote, that's
right.
That world will go away.
Right. I'd have to go to the Netflix or search for.
I'm just literally you sitting down. You're going to have all these extra things, the mouse and the keyboard, and you're going to have a place where the mouse can be moved around, whether you do it on the couch or on your leg or whatever. It's just a completely different experience. The other thing is your television designed to accept a computer signal now? Do you know if it has an input for that?
I don't believe so.
Because if it doesn't, television signals go across and they're displayed in what's called lines of resolution.
Yes.
Computers display in dots or pixels.
Yes.
So if the television display does not have the ability to display pixels, they have to smash the pixels down into lines.
Okay.
So that means text is going to be hard to read unless it's real big. You're going to get a lot of jagged lines. It's not conducive to that. So that'd be the first hurdle I think you're going to run into if you don't actually have a display made for computers.
Well, and sometimes it'll also stretch the image and skew
sure.
the actual picture.
Aspect ratio will probably be off and all that stuff. So it's not the first, if you're really going to commit to this type of consumption of internet-based video and what have you, you really should have a true computer display so you have the quality of picture that you're looking for.
Okay.
Because as soon as you have to convert it from the computer signal to a television signal, it gets ugly.
Okay.
So that'd be the first problem. The second is you're going to really have to think through your interfaces, right? You now have all of these different things, your wireless keyboard, your wireless system, the wireless mouse, all these things are points of failure. So that, you know, I mean, wireless stuff, you got to replace the batteries. If it's Bluetooth, it may need to be retrained from time to time. So the reason I'm bringing this up is I've been through this integration with a lot of people.
Okay.
Most of them, when they get to the other side, they're going, what was I thinking?
Okay.
Because literally, do you have anybody else in the house that's going to need to use this system?
It would probably fall to me to...
Right. When you're not home, I mean, I don't know if you're married, you got kids, but they'll have no idea how to work this thing. That's generally what happens in these situations. The real high-tech dad wants to do all this stuff. They're at work. They just want to watch the soaps or whatever, and they can't even figure out how to do it.
And if they can't use it, you might end up as a bachelor.
Well, I think the one child could handle it, and the other one would just be using the local channels that would come over the air.
Yeah.
Here's
the visual, the couch area.
Yes.
You still have the remotes. You still have the digital cable box remote or the digital converter. You have... You have the keyboard. You have the mouse. You're going to have this strew of electronics everywhere. And I'm not saying you shouldn't think about doing this, because this it's going this direction. You're going to see more and more of that. Let me ask, do you have a Xbox 360 by any chance?
No, I don't.
Okay, I was going to say, because if you did, that might be the first gateway to doing some of this. Like, if you're a Netflix customer and you have an Xbox 360, you can do the Netflix online kind of rental.
Yes.
Right through the Xbox. So now you're getting the proper conversion of displays and everything that we're talking about that you don't have in under normal circumstances.
Right.
Because the conversion is being done by the Xbox for you. You know, to a television signal.
Right. Yeah.
So you may want to maybe scale back some of the ambition you have and maybe really start to research. Sure, it can be done. Everything that you describe can absolutely be done. You know, it's going to cost you, you know, a lot of time and effort and money to find the right configuration of how you want to do things, but it can certainly be done.
Well, the other thing you could use would be if you want to go inexpensive, an Apple TV's $230, and it'll interface with the PC as well, and that stuff will just stream to the television and should be good to go.
Yeah, that's another way to do it. But if he's sitting at his television and he wants to go to a web address, what does he have to do?
Hack the Apple TV.
Hack it? In what sense?
They do have some web browsers that you can get for them, but you have to hack the software in order to get
okay,
it to
so,
work.
So the reality is you'd have to go wherever the computer is to set up the content or whatever, right?
Sure.
Okay. So, I mean, there's no easy way to get there. You're kind of ahead of where we're going. I mean, what you're describing is where we all want to go, where this stuff all works the same way, but it's actually pulling stuff from the Internet.
Right.
And so your set-top box manufacturers, your gaming console manufacturers, those are the people that are kind of taking the lead in that area. So you might want to do some homework on there. I'm going to put you on hold here. We're going to go to break, but we're going to make sure that you have what you need to be able to continue on this venture. To me, keep it simple, man. Keep the number of phone calls and the headaches down if you can. But guys like Rick are how we figure out how to make the stuff more functional, at least. Huh? We're talking about computer displays, television displays, all kinds of digital displays. Welcome back to the Computer Corner. We're talking about digital displays of all types. I asked Rick off the air after that last. I mean, he's a pretty ambitious guy. He wants to do a lot of crazy stuff.
I was in the same boat as he was, and I didn't give up. So,
I told him to report back whatever he decides to do. But yeah, don't forget those gaming consoles out there have a lot of connectivity to other content. It's not just for playing games with other people that have that console now. They're very, very internet concentric. The Wii, certainly the Xbox 360. I know the Sony PlayStation has some capability. So you'll start to see more and more of that type of interoperability. I know they're talking about the cable manufacturers are looking at set-top boxes that also have some functionality with the internet as well. So I'm not sure who you're going to go to for this, but this is where it's all going. We're all 5 years from now going to look back and go, remember when we had to choose between cable and the internet? It'll all just be this big cloud, and we won't even know who's what, and frankly, we won't care. So let's go back to the phones here and talk to Sherry.
Hi.
Sherry, you're having a problem with my favorite browser in the whole world.
Mine, too.
Is it Firefox?
Well, it's Flock. It has a feature that if it crashes, you can restore the session.
Uh-huh.
Which is awesome.
Yes.
Flock.exe. Except, yesterday it went down twice, took it all out of my computer, I thought, closed the computer, left it off, put Flock back in, and it gives me this, Flock.exe has encountered a problem, needs to close, sorry for the inconvenience. First I get restore session or not session. Well, there's no session because there was never a Flock in it. Any ideas?
Yeah.
I do love it.
Yes. When you tried to get the Flock out,
yes,
it didn't get out.
I know that, but I don't know what I did wrong.
Well, I don't know that you necessarily did anything wrong. I think it has more to do with the when these programs install themselves into a Windows operating system, mm-hmm. they make many, many, many changes in the registry. And I don't know, you said you did go into the registry and play around, right?
No, I'm not that.
Oh, you
good.
Didn't? Okay.
No, I'm
so
nowhere near that.
The registry is incredibly incredibly complex. It can have 10, 20, 30,000 keys. And those keys basically are added and updated and modified as you install programs. So it's almost like the DNA of the computer, right? And when the DNA gets messed up, then you get some strange results, and that's kind of what's happening. Frankly, I'm not even familiar with this program you're talking about, so I need to do a little homework on it to try to give you some guidance on maybe where you can find some help on trying to get that out. But the likelihood is that some change to the registry when you took it out or removed it and uninstalled it, a change that it made, it didn't undo that change.
Okay.
And so now it's going back to install, and it sees that there's something there, and you know it's in conflict with some settings and some registry keys that are in there.
By chance, any browser that does have this restore session feature?
Well, just about all of them do now.
Oh.
Firefox has it. Internet Explorer 7 and 8. I know 8 has it. I don't. Did 7 have it? I think 7 even had it, didn't it? But you can set that up in Firefox.
Okay.
And it's a very, very effective way to, and I think you go to Tools, and then let me get this, see if I can kind of walk you through this. Tools, Options, and I believe it's in the Advanced tab. I'll have to check. You know what? I'm going to put you on hold.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to make sure that I tell everybody that's using Firefox how to set this thing up, because it's a very cool feature that if something happens when you restart your browser, it just, whatever pages were open, whatever tabs were open, it just brings them all back. And it's just a setting that you turn on in Firefox if it's not already there. So hang tight for that, Sherry. Neil, Jason, Grace, Ken, hang tight. We're going to go to break here. I'm going to try to figure out what's going on with all of you during this break here, but we've got another hour to go. Excuse me. Hey, got our Geek Speak of the Week. We got some newsletter items to discuss. We're going to grab some stuff out of the email news bag there. We're going to look at our Twitter account. By the way, if you, somebody reminded me an email. Yeah. How do we follow you on Twitter? I'm the Data Doc on Twitter. So if you just search for the Data Doc, or just put the @ the Data Doc, or look at any of our newsletters and what have you, we have links to that. But those of you that are the tweeps out there listening and you want to Twitter your questions in or your comments, feel free to do that as well. I know a lot of techie types out there that follow us on Twitter that listen to the show. They can always say, Ken, you're a bonehead. This is the proper answer to that question. And we invite that as well, because the wisdom of the crowd is really what the show's about.
You mean you're not correct 100% of the time?
I am in my own mind.
Excellent.
And that's really all that matters.
That's what I like to hear.
Because I have control of the buttons. He who controls the buttons sounds like the smartest guy on the show, right? No, not at all. It's not like that. 602-277-5827 after you hear somebody hang up on the other side, or datadoctors.com/radio. Give us your 2 cents on today's topic, your questions, your comments. It does not matter. And while you're there, you can take a look at all the resources for those of you looking to buy a new display. The Data Doctors will be back right after this short message.
The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode. Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go,
don't!
It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3, KTAR.
And welcome to hour number 2 of the Computer Corner. We're talking about technology. We're talking about the latest and greatest in computer displays. Actually, just digital displays, because they're really, the line is kind of blurring between computer and television and whatever, right?
The CRT?
Yeah. Whatever happened to this thing where all our refrigerators are going to have displays on the front of them?
I saw it for a little while. It seemed to fade out.
I think that was probably a solution searching for a problem.
Or when you pull the milk out of the fridge and you're out of milk, then it's going to send you an email and tell you that you need to go and buy some.
Yeah, you know what you had to do to have those systems work? as you pulled it out of the fridge, you had to run it past the barcode scanner so it knew what you were pulling out.
Oh, it's not like the mini bar at the hotel. Don't lift it because you own it.
Well, then, no, that's because the cleaning crew comes in and does an inventory and goes, well, I'll take this and charge it to that guy. All right, before we go on, it's time for that that education segment that we like to call the Geek Speak of the Week, where we try to bring you a term, some portion of the vernacular that you might have seen, heard, or read about that you're going, sure would be nice to know what that means. Right? Yeah, that's a good one. You want to take this? Or do you got it up?
Certainly.
This week's Geek Speak of the Week is...
.pitch/pixel pitch.
Now, that's very appropriate since we're talking about monitors and displays. What pray tell, are dot pitch and pixel pitch?
It's the distance between pixels on a computer display when the screen is measured in millimeters. The smaller the number, the better. More detailed displays.
So there's another one of those specs that when you're going out looking for a new monitor, that you can kind of dig into the technical specs and just take a quick look and get an idea, is this on par with everything else I'm looking at? So what it's referring to is the space between the dots or the bars in the case of the LCDs, how much space there is between the actual elements that are displaying the image. The more space you have, the blurrier, the fuzzier the image is going to be. The less space there is, the tighter and the cleaner the picture is. So that's why you want to look at the smaller number when it comes to they'll either call it dot pitch. I think most of the LCDs you're going to see it, the pixel pitch, pixel range or pixel space, pixel depth. There's a lot of people that there are a lot of different companies that use a lot of different ways of saying the same thing. But you're looking for that. It'll say mm in millimeters. So you want to look for that smaller in the 25 millimeter. Or 0.25 millimeter, 0.22, 0.20. See, the smaller it goes, generally speaking, the cleaner the display is going to be. At the end of the day, though, when you are in the market for a monitor, this is one of those products that I caution you if you're thinking about buying a display sight unseen through an internet site. Because the specs could say one thing, one specification that's completely overblown, that I would recommend you don't use as a measuring stick for monitor versus monitor.
Are you going to say refresh?
No. Contrast.
Contrast ratio. Mm-hmm.
Completely overblown. And they're basically, contrast ratio is a, if everybody measured it the same way, then great. It's kind of like hard drives. Some people report hard drives as 1000K, right? And some of them use the actual 1024, right? When you get into gigabytes of space, that makes a big difference. That extra 24K per thousand starts to add up. So how they're reporting sometimes can be a little goofy. So keep that in mind if you're out there looking for a new display. So let's go back to the phones here and talk to Neil. Neil, you have a situation where you want to reload or you want to put a restore CD in, but before you do, you want to make sure your hard drive is in okie-dokie shape, yeah?
Yeah, that's a two-part question. That and the other question is it's a Dell computer that came preloaded with a lot of
stuff
that I don't need.
Yeah.
When I do the restore disk, the other part of the question is it going to restore all that junk or just the Windows operating system?
All right, so let's start with how old is the machine?
It's 03.
Ooh.
2003.
It's got some age.
Now, it's got some age. It runs good. It's just slow.
Well, here's the deal with computer hard drives.
Mm-hmm.
They run good until they don't.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, they don't give you any indication that they're having a tummy ache until they're having a tummy ache.
Oh, okay.
And so if you want to play it safe, if you're going to go through all this, I mean, a new hard drive that's probably twice the capacity is not that much money.
They're cheap now.
Oh, okay.
So you may want to hedge your bets because of the age of the drive. See, with a brand new hard drive, I we tell everybody, there are only two kinds of hard drives in this world. Those that have crashed and those that are going
to crash,
right?
Ready to crash.
Okay. Is that right? Which one do you have?
Probably the latter.
Okay. And the age would tend to suggest that it's probably, you know, I mean, it's got a higher likelihood of failing. Now, having said that, this particular hard drive you have could go another 10 years with no problems. There's just no way to tell you. Now, you can run tests that'll tell you for sure you're having a problem, you're having issues with bad sectors, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you can just run any of the disk utilities or built-in Windows that'll tell you that. The problem is, if it comes back clean, it doesn't mean you're not going to have a problem a month from now.
Oh, that I know. That I know.
So if you're going through this process and you're starting from scratch, consider it, because it's not that expensive to get a new hard drive. You're going to go through all this. Now, the second part of the question is, if you're going to use the magic disk that came with the machine, the unfortunate thing is, yes, all of the trialware and garbage software that they force on you is going to be part of that process. And here's why. One of the reasons why Dell has a lower price is they sell off your desktop real estate to these other companies. So they're subsidizing the lower price to you by making deals with these companies that say, if you'll put our trialware on your machine, we'll give you X dollars for every machine or whatever it is, pennies or whatever it ends up being, but ends up being real money. So they're going to make sure every time you run their little program that, of course, all that stuff gets back on there for the most part. So you'll probably have to go through the clean. If that's all you have, you don't have an actual regular CD, Windows CD, right? It's just the recovery system.
It's just the recovery.
Yeah. So if you're going to go through all that. Now, the cool part about the, if you do get a new hard drive, you can take the old hard drive and either leave it in there as a secondary drive, as a slave drive, or put it into like an external enclosure.
Right.
And start using it as a secondary, like a backup drive. Because you probably need one of those, right?
Yeah. No, I actually have an external hard drive.
You do? Okay. So that you know, that's another way to go about it. Or you can, to play it safe, don't touch this hard drive, right, since you're going to be wiping it out.
Mm-hmm.
Just get a new hard drive. Leave the old hard drive alone. That way, all of that data, just in case, you have yet another control copy until you get the new machine, the new hard drive set up, and everything's functioning beautifully.
Okay.
Because you can, you know, go back and forth that way.
Okie dokie.
Make sense?
Good question.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I know throughout the years that we've been working on computers, we've run hardware test after hardware test on hard drives, and the fact of the matter is it never shows you what you need to see.
Well, it cannot. The problem is if it shows up as a good drive, it could fail tomorrow.
Well, that's the thing. You'll test it. Someone would leave with the drive in hand.
We've
everything's working
there
beautifully, and they come back a week later, and the drive's failed now.
Or the worst situation is when somebody has a machine that's having a problem, they unplug it and they bring it to you. You don't plug it in while they're standing there, which is why data doctors stopped doing this years ago. We always plug it in and turn it on with the customer standing there, because what would happen is sometimes people would jar the thing or something would happen, or just the fact that they moved it because it hadn't been moved for so long caused a problem with the drive. And of course, they didn't see that. It was working fine when I brought it to you, and you have this whole...
Or the system was sitting in the trunk for 4 hours in the hot Arizona sun.
Yeah, not a good one. One of my biggest memories of horror story was somebody that we did just a massive amount of work on their laptop and finally got it, emergency service, everything, got it all taken care of, got them up and running, ready to go. Came and picked it up, put it on the front seat of his car, took off, and then had to slam on the brakes.
Ooh.
Like 2 miles down the road, and the laptop went flying.
Start over.
Yeah. In fact, when we come back, I'm going to give you all a tip on how to properly transport your computer when you need to take it in for service. It's the Data Doctors and Lewis from Mac Media back right after this. And welcome back to the Computer Corner. We're talking about digital displays and all kinds of other goodies that impact our lives here in technology. Your calls and questions, 602-277-5827. A couple lines open. We're getting a couple of different people in the email that are kind of asking the same question. It kind of leads into some of the other discussion we wanted to have about computer displays. Bram's joining us now with a question about you want to be able to display more than one thing on your monitor. Is that correct, Bram?
That's right. I'm trying to work a little bit more efficiently and thought if I purchased a large monitor, say 24 inches or greater, that maybe I could split the screen and I could view the website and a Word document at the same time.
Absolutely. In fact, you can do that on a regular 17-inch monitor. It just may not be formatted the way you'd like. these new widescreen displays, they call them cinema displays or whatever, they're really widescreen because they wanted to be able to have the right aspect ratio for today's high-definition videos and movies. They also double as a, you know, like I've been a dual monitor guy forever, and really, if you really want to be efficient, that's the way I'd suggest you go, because you can do some amazing things with dual monitors. You can kind of get a subset of that, though, with these widescreen monitors, because, you know, the if you get a widescreen monitor, you go on the internet, most internet pages are formatted for almost what they call a portrait, right? So it's long and skinny, and your display is short and wide. So you have this web page up, and it takes a little bit of the middle, and the sides just have these big borders on them, right?
Right.
So you can basically go to a window, right, resize the window for your browser, move that to one side, open up Word, and then resize that to whatever size you want. You can make either one of them bigger or smaller. You can make them exactly the same size. But there's no special technology involved. It's just a matter of you resizing the windows. So you're not using the full screen windows. You're not maximizing them.
And so I can manipulate both.
Absolutely.
At the same time.
You could have three windows open. You could have four windows open if that, you know, and you could go top bottom instead of side side. But, you know, I mean, with a widescreen monitor, the having the two windows next to each other probably makes the most sense.
Okay. And does that make more sense than using two separate monitors side by side?
If you use two separate monitors, it's a little easier to snap things into place. So, like, you can drag a window over to the second monitor and just double-click on the bar, and it goes maximum screen on that particular display. I'm partial to the dual displays because you can do – there's more flexibility in that. I don't have to work as hard to get everything set up and formatted. And I can also – take my spreadsheets, because I work on some pretty humongo spreadsheets, and stretch the spreadsheet over both screens.
Okay.
And
excellent.
So you know, it really depends on your usage. So take a look at that. Now, by the way, and leading into this, we thank you for your call, Bram. And hopefully, Ben or whoever is asking the same question in email, you heard that. Those of you that have a laptop or notebook or netbook computer, did you know that dual display thing I just talked about, did you know y'all can do that? At least in Windows. How about in the Mac? Can you stretch it across and make it two different displays? Or
sure.
Just go to the external mode?
It depends on whether you're in a mirror mode or you're running them independently.
Correct. Same kind of deal. You can simply plug any monitor into the monitor port of the back of the, whether it's a Mac or a Windows laptop, and you go into the control panel in the case of Windows to say, I want to use the second monitor as a second display, or I want to stretch my desktop across both of those. So it's just a setting. I actually have a video link to how you do that. If you're a laptop owner and you want to know how to do this dual monitor gig, check us out at datadoctors.com/radio. Look in the resources section and you'll see how to use dual displays with a notebook or a monitor or a laptop, or whatever we called it. Hopefully that helps. Actually, no lines open, so hang tight if you're looking to call in. We're going to go through the mailbox and see what other joint questions we have. Again, appreciate everybody tweeting us during the show as well. We still got another half an hour to go. We're talking about digital displays and whatever is ailing you. 602-277-5827 when you hear somebody hang up on the other side. And you're listening to the Computer Corner. Ken and Robert from Data Doctors, the Data Doctors du jour. Yeah?
Yep, definitely.
And Lewis from Mac Media. Try to cover the spectrum of the computer world every week. And using all the technology, we've got our Twitter accounts going and email and the phone and... not really sure how I'm doing this anymore. I can't keep track of
it. AIMing and text messaging. And
keeping track of everything that's going on there. So, Grace has been holding for nearly an eternity, but she's got a very important question.
I have been waiting forever, but you're worth it.
Oh, great. Thank you. okay. She said, I'm worth it, not you, Lewis. She said, come on. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, it depends on how the question's answered, and then we'll evaluate.
All right, we'll see who is providing the greatest value for you today.
That sounds great. Right. I have been suffering and going to all these computer stores and looking online and talking to people. I have a limited budget, and I need a new laptop. I need to watch a lot of movies or movie clips, And then I do an awful lot of writing. So that would be my need.
Okay, now and, when you say the movies and movie clips, let's delve into that, because depending upon how you answer this can determine a great deal of whether we tell you you can get the cheap stuff or you're going to have to go big time.
Okay.
When you say movies and are you talking about like DVD movies or are you talking about going online looking at YouTube videos?
Going online looking at YouTube videos.
Okay, because everything from the cheapest thing that you have, even a netbook can do that.
Okay. All right, yeah, I just need to look at...
So real, real basic usage.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I haven't explored everything I can do, but I know that I can't, I'm just confused, and I have a limited resources.
So you're not willing to pay the Apple tax?
No, Microsoft commercials. Taxes from anyone for any reason.
Well, Microsoft went on the offensive because Apple's been kind of bloodying their nose for so long about, you know, how much safer the Mac platform is. And how much easier. So Microsoft's whole thing is they're talking to people like you saying, well, yeah, but look at the tax you have to pay for all of that if you buy an Apple notebook.
Oh.
I mean, what's the lowest cost? What's the entry level for a Mac notebook?
$999.
About $1,000.
Wow.
So and that, no question, would do what you're saying and has a DVD player or a super drive.
Super.
Now, in the Windows world, you can get... a low-end notebook laptop that does have an optical drive. It has, you know, the ability to play DVDs and CDs and burn discs and that kind of thing. I mean, you're probably looking, you know, at a decent range, $600 to $800 tops.
Yeah.
So you can get that. Now, the netbooks, which don't have an optical drive, so you can't put any kind of CD in unless you buy a separate external drive.
Oh, they start at $300 now?
Yeah, they're $200 to $300 they start. $350 for a decent one with a 10-inch screen. But if you want to be able to, like, load software off of CDs and things and not have to convert it on another machine to a flash drive or something, then you're going to have to buy an additional component, an external optical drive, a DVD drive. To be able to load, or CDs, to be able to load stuff on through that interface.
Okay.
Are you, do you use a web-based email right now?
I do. Okay. I'm a Gmail fan.
Okay, great. So as long as you have an internet connection, you can get to your Gmail through a netbook. The word processing and what have you, you can load Microsoft Word and so on and so forth. And most of them come with a trial version of Office 2007 that if you liked all of that, you could just pay Microsoft the money and then activate the software and use it forever. It's going to have the web browser. It's going to have the ability to watch YouTube videos, all of that. So, I mean, a netbook may be, if you're on a budget, it may be the right thing, but it is smaller. So the screen's smaller. It's a keyboard smaller. It's not the same as a regular notebook.
Well, she says she's writing documents, so she's using next to no hard disk space.
Yeah, I mean, you're the thing that you're asking this particular computer to do, it does not require a lot of horsepower.
I know, but I do need to see. Unfortunately, I wear glasses, so I don't know about the...
Yeah, that's where you'd have to go look at those displays. It may be too small. You don't have as much real estate as well, so that, you know, even with the higher resolutions, you're still only talking about a small screen. Now, if you have an old computer with an old monitor, you could use your netbook at home, you know, using the bigger monitor, or even dual monitors like we were talking about. So, I mean, there's a lot of variables that are out there. But you're kind of in between there, right? The best bet for you is to go out and educate yourself and go look at the netbooks and go look at the lower-end notebooks to see which ones, from a price versus features versus display standpoint,
okay,
so that fits your needs.
And quick story, when you were talking about the computer flying off the seat, the reason I need a new laptop is I set mine on top of my car.
Oh, no.
And I was loading other things into the car.
Oh, no.
And I didn't remember that I had put my laptop up there.
It didn't just fall off. You left it on there and drove away.
And the neighbor, like, she did a little hunk. Like, I thought she was saying hello.
So you were waving back?
Yeah, I was waving. I didn't know she was hunking, like, your laptop. You know, if she would have done a more insistent hunk, I would have, you know. But
you mean the your laptop's on the top of your car honk?
Yeah, that honk.
Now,
yeah,
all of you neighbors out there, listen to what Grace is saying. If you see your neighbor driving off with the laptop on the top of their car, you need to lay into that horn and make sure they know it's the you have your laptop on your top of your car honk.
No, because they're yelling, your laptop's on the roof. She's going, you too.
Yeah,
oh, you're waving. Just waving. Yeah.
Okay, so, how do I how do I dispose of it? It's pretty much of a mess.
Well, you can take it to any of the Data Doctor's locations to have it recycled properly. So we don't want you to throw this stuff into the landfills.
Okay.
So we have a year-round recycling and donation program. If there's anything in there that can be used for the charities that we work with, then they'll take the parts out and do that. But if you want to make sure that it gets recycled properly, here in Arizona, you can go to any of the Data Doctor's locations, drop it off, and they'll take care of that for you.
Okay. Thank you for the time. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for holding, Grace, and hopefully you know what? When you go out, you got two options. When you go out and you say, okay, this is it, I'm comfortable, I'm going to buy this,
uh-huh.
Call us back and say, hey, this is what I did, and this is what I ended up with, and I'm really happy, or I hated it, or whatever, because I think other people will learn from this. Or when you get out there, you narrow it down to like two, like a netbook and a notebook or something.
Mm-hmm.
Bring that back to us. Call us up and say, these are the two I've narrowed it down to. I'm having a tough time, and here's where I'm at on these.
Well, I'm having the same problem with the standalone drive. It's like you go, and they all have all these different... You know,
are you talking about the external drive for backup?
Yes, the external drive.
Well, let me give you a quick tip on that. It's not the don't spend any time worrying about the actual drive itself. The only thing you care about is the size of the drive.
Okay.
The most important thing is what software comes with it that allows you to be successful backing up your stuff. So a lot of external hard drives, they sell them as a backup system, but they just sell you a hard drive. That means you have to know where the files exist on your computer. You have to know how to copy it over. And then here's the part where it all falls apart. You have to remember to do it.
Right.
Right?
Right.
It's completely useless. There are other companies. There's a company that has something called a one-touch backup, where all you have to do is remember to touch the button, and that tells the computer to back up, or that tells the system to start a backup, right?
Yeah.
Sounds pretty easy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know how many people come to our data recovery labs that have those hard drives that said, you know, I just kept forgetting to touch the button?
Wow.
So you really, your best bet is to get a good external hard drive, and it doesn't matter what brand it is, really, to me. What's important is what software, and that's going to be an additional price, and that's why you see the cheap ones and you see the more expensive ones. The more expensive ones have a good backup software program as part of the package.
So you mean by good, it does it automatically?
Correct. And it bugs you when it didn't get a backup. So let's say you turned your computer off and it's supposed to back up at 2 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
When you turn it back on, because you get up at 6 or 7 or 10 or 11, whatever time you get up, you fire up your computer and it says, I owe you a backup. Would you like me to start it now? It nags you.
Oh, I like
you
that.
Have to ignore, or actually, you have to work hard for these programs not to work.
And then Ken clicks later.
Yeah, later, whatever. Yeah. Right? So that's what you want. You want something that's scheduled. You want something that will allow you to make more than one backup if you're trying to do data sets. That way, you know, you have three or four backups instead of one. Because if you don't catch a problem and it backs it up, you got two copies of the bad stuff.
Oh, you all were so worth the wait.
All right,
big
Grace.
Big hugs and big kisses. Thank you.
And all of us were, right?
All of you were worth it. You get 5 stars.
All right, Grace. Hey, thanks for calling in. And please, whether you need our help finding, you know, with the finalists, right? Or you make a decision, call us back and tell us how it went.
I appreciate it, and I will do just that.
All right, Grace. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that is supposed to be how it works every time, right? We have a good time. Give her a little education. We feel good about ourselves. I'm almost tearing up. It's not that beautiful, is it?
It's a beautiful thing.
Let's see if I can help Josh. Josh?
Hey, how you doing?
You have a quick question about upgrading the RAM?
Yeah, well, actually, I was just wondering if my RAM could be slowing down my internet.
Generally speaking, that would not be the first thing that I would look at.
Okay, well, I have Cox.
Uh-huh.
And... I have 512 meg of RAM. I've got a 60-gig hard drive. The computer's about 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I've got a wireless network set up in my house that's open. The gateway's open to 10-plus megs per second. I'm only able to pull down, like, 1.2 on a download.
You're talking about on a through your wireless connection?
Yeah.
Do you know which wireless card is in this computer?
No, I actually have it. I have a Motorola Wireless G.
Oh, it is a G. Okay. There's a couple things you can do to, one, make sure it's your internet connection. Or is there more than one machine on this network?
No, this is the only one.
This is the only one. Okay, because that's a quick way to know if it's the network connection, the internet connection, or your machine. Because
okay.
if you get another machine on there and you do the test and it's blazing fast and you know it's the computer, you
okay.
can go to a website, and I'm giving you a recommendation to use the tools, but don't fall for all of their advertising to buy the software that's going to make your computer faster. I'm not endorsing the software that's on this site, but the site itself, PCPitStop.com.
PCPitStop?
Yeah, there's a place where you can test your internet connection.
Okay.
Okay.
I went to this one that was like it was a Clockers website, and I was just wondering if maybe it was Cox. Maybe their servers are overloaded or
no, it wouldn't be the servers. It would have to do with your actual connection and how many other people are on that connection at the same time at that particular moment. So
okay.
you'd want to do this test at various times of the day to see if the download speeds vary based on the time of the day.
Okay.
The first thing you want to do is just determine that, you know, I'm getting a pretty decent download speed. Because what it does is it tests your cable modem to a site out there, and it takes your computer out of the picture.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so it's testing from your cable modem out to someplace in Los Angeles or Dallas or whichever one you choose.
Oh, okay.
And it'll tell you what the connection speed is between those two points. So if that shows up as being pretty fast, then the problem is likely to be your computer. You, just in general usage, you probably want to think about going to one a gig of RAM, because that'll make everything. But you may have other issues. You may have processes running. Are you in front of your computer by any chance?
No, I'm actually in my car on the side of the road.
Okay. Hang on. I'm going to put you on hold here because we're going to go to break. I'm going to try to give you some other tips to try to make things better. It is the Computer Corner, and we'll be back right after this. Hey, have you ever wondered about those finally fast commercials on television?
Finallyfast.com.
My newsletter description, the title you might have seen where it said, finally, not so fast! Because, first of all, a commercial that's pitching a Windows cleanup program...
And showing Mac computers.
...that uses Macs, and then it shows a Mac notebook with a blue screen... you got to be questioning, okay, does anybody at the company care that that's a bad signal?
I thought it was a little bizarre.
Well, here's the other thing. They tout coverage by Forbes and Newsweek and a bunch of other very prestigious magazines. You go to their website and they tout that as well. But oddly, there's no way to click on the link to see what these companies are saying about this particular website.
So news coverage that might not necessarily be good?
Well, if you dig real deep, the parent company has gotten coverage for some of the software that they've introduced, but it has nothing to do with this Finally Fast. But, again, these are things that, at the end of the day, that's my advice column this week. If you are a newsletter subscriber, you've already gotten that, and it's posted up in the free help section of our website. The bottom line is what they're offering to sell you, you can find free replacements. They're not, and the free ones aren't going to do anything better or worse than what these programs that they're trying to sell you. Now, a lot of people are claiming that there's malware errors and alerts coming up. There's a free service called Web of Trust, WOT, that if you are running the Web of Trust software on your browser, if you go to the finallyfast.com website, I go bonk, and it comes up with a lot of warnings. Talking about malware and not malware, but adware and those kinds of things. Whether it's true or not, it's dependent on how. Basically, a lot of people that have visited this site have said this hasn't worked out so well or whatever. So, yeah, what is that?
I've got my credit card out. I'm ready.
You're ready to go. So, yeah, you know those cheesy commercials. That's usually a good indication of whatever they're selling. You'd be a little suspicious, and so. Buyer beware. Do your homework. Make up your own mind whether you want to use that particular service or not. But my two cents are posted on the website. There's a new logo system for Intel processors that's supposed to be a way for people to have a much easier way to understand what they're buying. And, of course, in order for people to understand this new, easy, simplified way, we have to have this whole decoding program and
so this
explanation.
It's like the Dewey Decimal System?
It's something. So that's the one of the columns that I have in this week's newsletter link. Also, if you're just getting started or haven't started Twittering, you're not on Twitter, there's a link to 8 Twitter username tips. You know, especially if you get in there and you go, oh, somebody's already got my name, because only one person can have that. Well, the tip in any social media is not to go Lewis 235. Oh, because Lewis 234, 233, all of those were all taken, right? No. Distinguish yourself a little better. What you use as your moniker, your nickname in social media can have an impact for down the road, can be important. So there's another tip in there for some different and unconventional ways to use your digital camera. It's not just for taking pictures. There's a whole lot of other things that you probably haven't thought of that you can use your digital camera for, like making sure you have a record for insurance, right? Take pictures of those things that you want to be able to prove you had should your house burn down or what have you. It's helpful to have this documentation. By the way, those of you that kind of scoffed at all the hype on the Conficker worm, that's exactly what the author of the worm wanted to have happen, as it turns out, because they are getting very sneaky. They're slowly releasing the instructions, not to everybody, not to all the infected computers, just small numbers of infected computers that are going out and wreaking some havoc with spam and sending out those fake antivirus programs that we keep talking about that are getting worse. Now they have the ransomware component. So the it's a confusing thing. Conficker is infecting older systems that aren't patched, pirated software programs. So most of the infected machines are in Asia and in Europe. Less than 6% are supposedly infected machines that are in North America.
Well, because all your listeners have the updated service packs.
Yeah, but the problem is those infected machines in Asia are the ones that are now sending garbage to us, sending spam to us, and trying to get us to get infected with some of these other malware programs.
So they're acting as hosts.
So the Conficker issue is still in play. Those infected machines are still sending junk out. And you just got to be up, just be diligent about, you know, all these warnings that we give you. And obviously, just keep listening to the show. Subscribe to our free newsletter, datadoctors.com/help, and you can see what it's all about. Lewis, thank you. How do the people get hold of you during the week?
Hit me at macmediainc.com.
There you go. And Robert and Ken from Data Doctors, datadoctors.com, and we appreciate you all joining us. You want to learn more about digital displays? datadoctors.com/radio. We'll see you all next week.